So thank you very much for coming out. And again, we're going to try to spend the next few minutes that we have together to learn the Torah, the research of Rav Eitam Henkin, and to have again his Sfasayim Dovev Mikever, to have his lips speaking from the Kever, so to speak. And this should be a Tzion Nefesh Chaya. It should be a memorial for him, as we spoke last time about the comments of the Netziv, that if you want to understand what a person is truly about, it's about learning their Torah, learning about their connection to Torah, and this is how we can spend just a little bit of our time and a little bit of our Torah to have a proper memorial for Rav Eitam Henkin and his Eishes Chayil Nama. Last time we spoke about an article dealing with the construction of the Beis HaMikdash, and that was part of the focus of his Torah, of his being in the Beis Medrash. And tonight, we want to focus on the second part of his life, which is his access and his interest in history, specifically in modern Jewish history. And he had a tremendous love and a tremendous affection for the Aruch HaShulchan, Rabbi Yechiel Mechel Epstein. And what we're going to do is we're going to combine all of the articles that he wrote about the Aruch HaShulchan, all the different facets of his writing and his life, and I kind of mix them all together. So everything we're going to say over the next few minutes is from Rav Eitam's pen and from his research. I'll throw in a few things here and there, but everything is coming together from a number of articles, and I'll cite the articles as they come up of where we're working from, in order to put together a really beautiful picture about Rabbi Yechiel Mechel Epstein, the author of the Aruch HaShulchan, and who he was, and his impact on the life that we live today. I just noticed in the last few weeks there were two hespedim, two ideas that were put together about Rabbi Henkin's life and his research. One was from a friend of his, Rabbi Yechiel Goldhaber, who's a very big Talmud Chacham in his own right, who writes very interesting svarim. He actually has a whole sefer about halachos pertaining to the Titanic and the sinking of the Titanic, and how the different halachos that came about through that historical event. And he writes about very interesting things. And he wrote a very beautiful hesped for his friend, Rav Eitam Henkin, and that is on the Svarim blog, which is a popular website that people like to look at and read. And in addition, there was another hesped that was put together by Professor David Asaf. David Asaf is a well-renowned historian of modern Jewish history. He's written wonderful books in Hebrew, translated into English as well. It likes to talk about controversial things, and his hesped is equally touching as it was offensive at the same time. The hesped in which he wrote for Rav Eitam Henkin, who was technically a student of his. He was going to be the professor who was going to oversee Rav Eitam Henkin's doctorate. And he writes beautifully about his love for each other and how much of a mensch he was and what a tremendous person he was. But he also, in his hesped, has a tremendous disdain and hatred for religious Jewry and religious Jews. And it's a very interesting piece of work that he put together. And it's very distasteful, the way he writes about those who are Shomer Torah Mitzvos and learn Torah. And at the same time, his love for his student, who was a very religious person and did love Torah and did love Mitzvos at the same time. But in that hesped, he reveals something which is quite painful, which is that Rav Eitam's doctorate that he was about to start was going to be a doctorate on the biography of the Chafetz Chaim. We almost had the opportunity to have a tremendous biography, a researched, well-written, cited biography of the Chafetz Chaim, calling together all the sources, and that was going to be Rav Eitam's doctorate. And now that Rav Eitam was murdered, we are left without this opportunity, and we'll have to wait for somebody else to pick up the baton. But a real biography of the Chafetz Chaim, really putting together his life story, would have been a remarkable treasure, a remarkable gift, which unfortunately we'll have to wait for another time. So let's begin. Rabbi Yechiel Mechel Epstein was born in 1829, and he's born to his father, Rav Aaron Yitzchak Epstein, when his father was 19 years old. And his father was a professional builder, at the same time a Talmud Chacham. He was Kovei Itim, at the same time working in the building profession. Rabbi Yechiel Mechel had one brother, Rav Binyamin Beinish, who was a Talmud Chacham in his own right, and he was a Rav who wrote the Shaios HaTshuvos Divrei Mordechai, and the brothers were very, very close. His brother lived in St. Petersburg, and whenever Rabbi Yechiel Mechel had to travel to St. Petersburg to go meet with the censor, who we'll talk about later, the censor who's in charge of editing his Aruch HaShulchan, he always would stay with his brother, and they had a very close and warm relationship between the two of them. He was born in Babruysk, which is today a city in Belarus. I have a map over here, but I only have one of it because I couldn't get access to make copies. But everything we're about to talk about is really happening within the same 150 miles. He did not travel very far, and he was born in the city of Babruysk, which is near Minsk. And the city is significant because the city was at a very interesting geographical point. It was at the crossroads between Lithuania, Russia, and Ukraine. So you had all different types of Jews traveling through this area in the city. You had Hasidim, Misnagdim, Maskilim, all coming through this very interesting town. And there was a very large Chabad population and a very small population of Misnagdim, those who were not Hasidish. And the Epstein family were with the Misnagdim. And they were certainly in the minority. And the relationship between the Misnagdim and the Hasidim in this city was very, very good at that time. And the Rav of the town was Rav Baruch Mordechai Edinger, and he was a Lubavitcher Chassid, and originally the Misnagdim didn't want this Lubavitcher Chassid to be the rabbi of the city, but eventually he prevailed over them with his learning and his Midos Tovos, and he won them over and became a respected Rav amongst the Misnagdim and the Chassidim as well. Rav Yechiel Michal was named for his great-grandfather, Rav Yechiel Michal Halevi Epstein of Urtsa, and the Halevi Epstein family is a very distinguished family. They take great pride in talking about their Yichus, or where they came from. The whole family was originally Sephardic, and they came to the town of Epstein, and then eventually the family became well known. But the Halevi Epstein family was a very prestigious family, and they loved writing about their family, their yichus, how much they accomplished, who they came from. There was a very big source of pride amongst the family to be part of the Halevi Epstein group. At a young age, he was in cheder, and it was recorded that young Rav Yechiel Michal had a tremendous ability of halacha psuka. He just gravitated towards halacha lemaisem, psak halacha, and it's something he found to be very interesting. And the original plan was that he was going to be like his father. He was going to go work, be koveya itim at the same time, and be a fine balabas. And they trained him already to have a good command of Russian, because in order to be in business, you had to write Russian well and to speak Russian well at the same time. But something happened, because he was at a sudas mitzvah when he was a young boy in Babruysk, and Rav Eliyahu Goldberg, who was a Talmud of Rav Chaim Volozhin, was at the sudas mitzvah, and he was speaking with this young Rav Yechiel Michal. And there, he was blown away and very much impressed with this young man, and he turned to the parents and said, "This young man needs to be in Limud HaTorah full time. He's not going out to work. This is a mind that needs to be dedicated to Torah." And that was the plan. He was shipped off to learn in Volozhin, and he learned there under Rav Yitzchak of Volozhin till he was 18 years old. And we know very little about the early part of his life, but we do know that Rav Yechiel Michal, when he was in Volozhin, the story is told that to get from where the Bachrim were living to where the Beis Medrash was, it took some time, a lot of walking, and he felt it was Bittel Zman, Bittel Torah. And what he did is he took a mattress and he stuck it in the storeroom in one of the closets in Volozhin, and he would sleep there in the yeshiva, so he wouldn't waste a minute to make sure he would be at the Beis Medrash right when he would wake up, and able to collapse on his mattress right when he would go to bed. And when Rav Yitzchak of Volozhin found out about this, he did not love it, because in Volozhin they were very makbid on sedarim, to make sure that you're in the right place at the right time, no earlier, no later, to have to keep the sedarim. There's a famous maisa with the Netziv. The Netziv would ask the Bachrim when they came into Volozhin, and they would say, "Tell me your definition of a masmid. What does it mean to be someone who has a smada, who really pushes themselves?" And the Bachram would say, "Someone who learns 16 hours a day, 18 hours a day, skips meals, pushes himself, this is the definition of a masmid." And the Netziv would turn to the young Bachram and say, "No, that's not a masmid. A masmid is a person who keeps his siddurim day in, day out, no matter what. When you learn from 9 to 5, so you sin, you learn. When it's time for lunch, you go to lunch. And when it's time to take a break, you take a break. A masmid is a person," says the Netziv, "who keeps the siddurim, who keeps to the plan, and no matter what's going on, if he has a Seder and he's not feeling well, so he's in Seder. And if it's time for lunch, but he has what to learn, so he goes to lunch." A masmid means you push yourself, but you keep the schedule that was taken, and the Sedarim were very important in Volozhin. At the end of his time in Volozhin, he was approached with a Shidduch, but not just a Shidduch, one of the Shidduchim of the century. There was a young Ram in the yeshiva. His name was Rav Naftali Svi Berlin, the Netziv. And the young Ram felt, and it was suggested, that the young Rav Yechiel Michal would be a good match for the Netziv's sister. And she was the daughter of Yaakov of Berlin, of Meir, and this was their shidduch together, and their subsequent marriage was a great coming together of two great friends, Rabbi Yechiel Michal Epstein and Siv, who really had a tremendously loving relationship for the rest of their lives. Rabbi Yaakov Berlin gave his son-in-law a very large dowry for the marriage so he could sit and learn. But something happened. The investment of the dowry went sour. And Rav Yaakov Berlin was a big mevater, a big tzaddik, and he didn't want to go and ask for the money back because he felt inappropriate that he should go and violate the pasuk of the Torah, Lo Siyah Lo Kanusha, to go and abuse to the person who owes you money to harass them. And he didn't want to get the money. But Rav Chiel Michal, he felt that it was inappropriate that his father's money was lost, and he went to get the money back. It's not clear what happened after that point, but we do know that at a certain point, he left Kollel, and he opened up a store. He went back to Babarusk with his wife, and they opened up a store. And his wife, technically, it was a shutfus, it was a joint effort between him and his wife, but as he was maspid at his wife's levaya, he said, for 30 years, we ran this store together, and in those 30 years, I could tell you, I have no idea how to get to where the store was. I couldn't find it in the street, because his wife was so dedicated to his Limud HaTorah that she said, I'll take care of the store, you sit and learn, you take care of the Talmidim, and I will spend my time learning. And this was the great praise he had for his wife at the end of her life. In 1852, the Av Basin of Babarusk, Rav Eliyahu Goldberg, who we mentioned before, gave smicha to Rav Yechiel Michal, and he started giving shirim in the community, and eventually pointed Ram in the yeshiva in the Altshul. That was the Misnagdash Yeshiva in Babarusk. And he had a number of many well-known Rabbanim who were his Talmidim. I don't know if it was in Babarusk, but we do know that the Panovich Rav got his smicha from the Aruch HaShulchan, Rabbi Yechiel Michal Epstein, and he had a number of prestigious Talmidim. Rabbi Yechiel Michal continued to become close and learn from his Rebbe, Rabbi Eliyahu Goldberg, and there are constant references to a Gadol Echad throughout the Aruch HaShulchan. Many, many references to this Gadol Echad. Who is the Gadol Echad? It's very clear, says Rabbi Henkin, that this is Rabbi Eliyahu Goldberg, his great Rebbe. And it's actually a reference to a famous story to anyone who has learned Yerodea, in which the Aruch HaShulchan writes in Sadi Vav Yud Gimel, Ubi Aldusi Shamati Mi'echan HaGadolim. And when I was younger, I heard from one of the Gadolim, this is Rav Eliyahu Goldberg, Shagon Echad, that there was a great genius, and this is referring to Rav Chaim of Elazhin. Hikil Beraitech Shekliposo Levan. There was a discussion about a radish or an onion that had a white cover around it. V'amar she'oso Shekliposo Shachor Hu Charif Bioser. But the onion that had the black cover around it was sharper. And V'achush Meid Kach, and the senses could indicate this. V'omer she'haraitech Hagadil Me'eretz Yisrael B'vavel Kulan Kliposin Shechora. In Bavel Me'eretz Yisrael, they are black and they are sharper. Umarim harbe ve'ashal yismocha zeb b'makom hefsed. And therefore, since our onions are not as sharp as the onions in Eretz Yisrael, if a person does mess up with a knife and an onion or some sort of davar charef, you can be mekel. And this was the chiddush of Rav Chaim of Elazhin. And who do we have this mesorah from? From his Rebbe, Rav Eliyahu Goldberg. A very important part of his life. In the 1860s, he was serving as a dayan in the Beis Din of Rav Eliyahu Goldberg, and even in his early 30s, he was greatly respected by all of the people in his city in Babarusk. At that point, Rav Yechiel Michal took a position for 15 years in the city of Novosibirsk. Now, Novosibirsk was in Russia, about 140 miles away, and the city was half the size of Babarusk, a much smaller city. Three quarters of the city were Goyim, and the rest of the Jews were either Maskilim or Chabadniks or Chernobyl Hasidim. Almost no Misnagdim in the city. Why would he leave the city where he was learning by his Rebbe to go? Parnassa, he needed to make a living, so he went to be the rabbi of the city for 15 years. During this time, there's a very interesting event, and the details of the event are a bit cloudy, because most of the story comes from the Makor Baruch, the autobiographical series published by his son, the Torah Tamimah of Baruch Epstein. And the story is that the Lubavitcher Hasidim in his city asked him to go meet with Rav Menachem Mendel Schneerson, the Tzemach Tzedek. And there was some sort of great meeting of the minds for about a month. The story is they met for a number of hours each day. And according to the Makor Baruch, the Aruch HaShulchan's son, they spoke about the opposition of the Vilna Gaon to the Hasidim. They talked about Rav Nachman of Breslov. They spoke about the difference between the Ktos HaShulchan and the Nesivos HaMishpat. They spoke about the Nodeh B'Yehuda, issues relating to philosophy, all all different types of interesting conversations recorded there in the Makor Baruch of what they spoke about. And he records that they were there for a long time. And when this story was published for the first time in the Makor Baruch, there were a lot of questions about what actually happened. Because the stories and the conversations seemed to be so fantastic about what was going on at that meeting. And one of the questions that were raised is that why would the Tzemach Tzedek say something negative about the Nodeb Yehuda when he has such glowing letters about the Nodeb Yehuda? And the entire episode is recorded by Rav Baruch Epstein is very apologetic towards Hasidim, always saying the Hasidim, they weren't so bad originally, and the Gra helped the Hasidim out, and it's a very positive view of the Hasidim. And the Rabbanim after this was published, Rav Yehuda Kamelhar, who's a famous biographer of the Nodeb Yehuda, and Professor Emanuel Etkes, they both felt that Rav Baruch Epstein stretched a lot of the truth about what happened at this meeting between his father and the Tzemach Tzedek. And there's an article by Rav Yehuda Manshein, who's the famous Chabad historian who passed away earlier this year, and he felt that Rav Baruch Epstein was really trying to fix a problem. What was the problem? That the psukim of the Aruch HaShulchan at that point were not really accepted in the Hasidic Shavelts. They weren't learned by the Hasidim. The Hasidim in the Hungarian communities and the Polish communities were not accepting the psukim of the Aruch HaShulchan, and therefore he wrote this whole story to show that his father liked the Hasidim and he was pro the Hasidim, and therefore hoping in some way that this would come to support his father's Sfarim and people would learn them more. So Rav Eitam Henkin says, I don't buy it, because there are so many clear records that the Aruch HaShulchan was immediately popular and beloved by so many people. So why would he feel that his father Sefer needed a little bit of a push, you know, to go on the book club to make sure that people would read it? It was already a beloved Sefer. And therefore he finds that point to be very unclear. But whatever it is, we have this very vague meeting between the Aruch HaShulchan and the Baal Tzemach Tzedek. There is not much we know about the time spent in Novosibirsk, but there is one very famous event, and anyone who has learned issues of Chol of Yisrael and Chol of Akum, there is a very striking passage in the Aruch HaShulchan that took place while he was there. This is in Yoredei and Siman Kuf Tesvav, and he records a very, very striking incident. He says, let me explain to you how the words of Chazal are like coals of fire. I need to tell you what my broken heart has come across. I was in the rabbi in this one city. This one city is Novosibirsk. Whenever one of the Balabatim and his shul would go traveling in another city, the Medina of Yoshev Tadjer B'Shem Va'iskov, dealing with business, V'hu V'od Orchim B'Shosasim Chamim B'Boker V'Yukonim Cholov Shemen Shekorin Sment. They would buy this very thick cream called sment, Eitzel Chanvani Eino Yehudi by a guy, this type of milk product, this creamy product, Shekineged Achsanya Shalhem, that was in their inn, Upam Echas Hischilu Lachor Benehem Me'eno Kecha Chanvani Akotan Zeh Kolka Chelv Shomein. How did this poor innkeeper get such chush of a cream and milk? It's delicious. How did he make it so good? I'm sure you already know what's going to happen. V'halach hula chanvani v'shalu. And they asked the storekeeper, how is this cream so delicious? V'amar leya chanvani. Oh, let me tell you. Ani kona be'idliz, I go to the shlacht house, shalbasa where the meat is. Harbe moach, shalbehemos. And there's a lot of animal brain. And I mix it together with a lot of milk. And I cook it together. And this is the fat, he says, and they all fell on their face crying over the tremendous aveira sha'achlu trefus abasu b'chalav ubalabayis hatzvada lefanai. And the balabas came back to me, the Aruch HaShulchan, v'tzak b'kol kama gadolim divrei chachamim. I should have listened to Chazal. I should have been careful about what they told me to do about chal of akum ube'emes kach hublani shekol gzeres chacham levad ta'amim hanigla yeshod harbe. The famous reason that they'll go, that even if you understand one aspect of the Gzeirus of the Chachamim, there's other aspects that were not revealed to us, and therefore, he says, we have to be so careful when it comes. And then, just in brackets, the Aruch HaShulchan finishes off, Ubiyichat Shamatei heard, Sheba America, in America, Ish Rabbi Ma'umos Sheshosim Chalav Chazir, a lot of people drink pig's milk, B'Pnei Shemutsuyim Sham Harbe, because pig's milk is popular in America. Okay? So, the Aruch HaShulchan certainly had an interesting time in his shtat in the small city. There are a number of other mentions of his Rabbanus in Russia scattered throughout the Aruch HaShulchan, dealing with treifus and other issues, but not nearly as exciting as finding cow brains in your milk. Okay. In Nevazbekov, he started working on his first sefer, the Oral Lesharim, which is a sefer on the Sefer HaYashar for Beinu Tama, halachic work that follows the Gemara, and it contained haskamos from many, many gedolim. Rav Yitzchak Elchanan, inspector, the Rav Kovner, the Maharil Diskin, the Netziv, very chashuva people wrote him approbations, and it also contained a haskama of Rav Aaron of Chernobyl, because he had a close association with the Hasidim in his city. And this proved difficult later on, because when Rav Yechiel Michal wanted to go to Nevardik later on in life, there was a bit of a tumult, because they didn't like that he had a Hasidisha Haskama in his Sefer. And they didn't want to give him the Rabbanus, but eventually that cleared over. The Sefer itself has a lot of mistakes in it, because we had a lot of kisveya, a lot of mistakes over the printing of the Sefer, and Rav Yechiel Michal took it upon himself to fix these mistakes. But he did it only based on his own understanding of the Sugyas and his understanding of Kol HaTorah Kula. So some of his corrections are not exactly correct when compared to manuscripts that we have nowadays, but the Sefer is certainly a very interesting one, with a very interesting commentary. As his stay in Nevazbekov came to an end, so his relationship with the Netziv took a different turn. Because as of now, the Aruch HaShulchan and the Netziv are what? They are brothers-in-law, right? He married the Netziv's sister. Before they were brothers-in-law. Now, Rav Yechiel Michal is going to become the father-in-law of the Netziv as well, in one of the most confusing marriage genealogies ever produced. What happens is this. The Netziv was born in 1817, and he married shortly after his bar mitzvah in 1830. The Netziv's first son from the first marriage was Rav Chaim Berlin, right? And he was born when the Netziv was 15 years old. He had his first son. His wife was Reina Batcha, the daughter of Itzel Volozhin, and the first wife of the Netziv. And she died after 40 years of marriage. So at this point, the Netziv is 55. And the family of the Netziv wanted him to remarry. 55 years old, still a young man, it's time to remarry. So he married Miril, or Batcha Miriam, who was the daughter of his brother-in-law. So first he was married to his brother-in-law's sister, his wife was his brother-in-law's sister, and then he married his brother-in-law's daughter. So his brother-in-law was his brother-in-law and his father-in-law at the same time. This was the relationship between the Aruch HaShulchan and the Netziv. The story is that the idea of the Shidduch came from Rav Baruch Epstein, the Torah Tamima, and he gave it to his father, the Aruch HaShulchan, to think about, and the Aruch HaShulchan thought it was ridiculous that his 18-year-old daughter was going to marry his 55-year-old brother-in-law. But when his daughter-in-law heard that she would have the chance to marry the Rosh Hashiva of Elazhin, she said, yes, I'm going to do it, and you can't stop me, and they got married. And they had a child afterwards. Who was the child? Rav Meir Bar Ilan. Rav Chaim Berlin, Rav Meir Bar Ilan are half-brothers, and they're separated by a good 50 years or so. So that's the relationship between them. And in reality, though, Miril was actually married before she married the Netziv, because Miril was married to someone who was promised to be a Talmud Chacham. And there was a big stipend given, and she was ready to move in with the guy, and they got married, and after a few days, she was promised that this guy was going to be a Talmud Chacham, who was going to sit and learn. And it turns out, the guy was a batlan. He was not going to sit and learn. She says, I'm going to have nothing to do with this Shegetz who's not going to learn. And she left the house, went back to her father's home, and said, I'm never living with him. I want to get. And they tried to convince her to go back with him. She said no. And now she had the opportunity to marry the Rosh Yeshiva Lajin. She took it and was very happy with it. The Netziv and Rav Yechiel Michal had a very, very close relationship. Often Rav Yechiel Michal would travel to Volozhin, and they would honor the Aruch HaShulchan by having him give shir in Volozhin. Sometimes the Netziv would ask him for advice about running the yeshiva in Volozhin. We see that when the Russian government forced the yeshiva to teach Russian, there was a machlokus amongst the Rebbeim in Volozhin, who should teach Russian? Should you have a Jew teach it, or should you have a guy teach it? So Rav Chaim Brisker said you should have a guy teach Russian. Why? Because if you have a Jew come and teach Russian, most likely what is that Jew going to be? He's going to be a maskil. He's going to be taken over by the Enlightenment, and he's going to have a shpa influence on the Talmidim. This is a very similar comment that Rav Yaakov Edlinger made when it came to teaching secular studies in his yeshiva in Germany. He would not have Jews teach secular studies. He would only have Goyim teach, because he did not want to have a maskil come and influence the kids. On the other hand, the Aruch HaShulchan Rabbanan argued, he's still a Jew, you should give him a job, and therefore the Jews should teach in Volozhin. Another issue, the Netziv had to travel to St. Petersburg to deal with issues relating to the closing of Volozhin. Right, Volozhin had to be closed because there was a lot of rebellious activity going on in the yeshiva, and they would bring him along because he spoke Russian and wrote Russian beautifully, and therefore it was an asset to have him come speak with the officials. And when the Netziv retired to Warsaw after the yeshiva was closed, Rabbi Yechiel Milchel would go to visit him in Warsaw when he had to go and deal with the printing issues when it came to the Aruch HaShulchan, and they would talk and learning, and their private correspondences that are mentioned in the Hemak Shela or the Hemak Davar and the Chaperish and the Chumash and the Netziv, and there was a lot of correspondence between the two. In return, the Aruch HaShulchan quotes his brother-in-law and son-in-law a number of times from his parish on the Sifri and the Meshiv Davar, so there's a lot of cross-pollination between the two when it came to Limud HaTorah. The only other two contemporaries mentioned by the Aruch HaShulchan in his Sefer was Rav Eliezer Moshe Horowitz of Pinsk and the Chafetz Chaim. There's a mention to the Mishnah Berurah to the Chafetz Chaim in his Sefer for another time. In 1874, right after the Netziv married the daughter of the Aruch HaShulchan, the Aruch HaShulchan moved to his last city, which was Novardik, the famed Rav of Novardik for 30 years. He was 45 at the time, and he would hold that position until his death in 1908, for over 30 years. And his arrival was met with great fanfare. There was announcements in the newspaper. It was a big deal. And in reality, the plan was that Rav Yechiel Milchel was going to be the Rav in a small city called Lubcha, which is about 15 miles away. And when Novardik found out that the Chashav Rav was going to be the Rav of some small town in Lubcha, they said no. And they went and they chapped him. And they made him the Rav of the city. They worked it out. They gave him a lot of money. I don't know. I'm sure there was some sort of animosity between Lubcha and Novardik at this point. But they chapped him and they made him the rabbi. And it was a very successful shidduch. Everything we quoted so far about Rav Yechiel Milchel was from an article in Yeshurun, the Torah Journal, volume 25. In volume 27, Rav Eitam Henkin picks up and discusses the family of the Aruch HaShulchan. And he goes through the children. He says the most famous child of the Aruch HaShulchan is, obviously, Rav Baruch Epstein, the Torah Tamima, the Makor Baruch, the Tosefes Bracha, the Baruch Sha'amar, the beautiful Svarim in which he has put together. And the father and son are very close, and Rav Yechiel Milchel wrote a very glowing haskama for the Torah Tamima, but we actually find that in the Makor Baruch, there's very little about his father. And most of the discussion in the Makor Baruch, his autobiography, is about his uncle, the Netziv. That's the title of the Art Scroll translation, My Uncle, the Netziv. That is just a small piece of the much larger work. And the reason is because, even though he had a close relationship with his father, he left his father's house after his bar mitzvah and didn't really see him again. And he spent most of his time in Vilna and in Volozhin with his uncle, and therefore that's where he has most of his experiences from. And even when Rav Yechiel Milchel died, the responsibility of the Aruch HaShulchan did not fall to what you think. What you thought it would fall to his Chashuva son to take care of printing his father's most important work. It did not. It fell to his daughter, who we will discuss momentarily. In addition, when he does mention his father, he talks about different references in the Torah Tamima to issues of there's a sheet in the Gemara that says that you have to, the witnesses have to say when they bring a get, b'fanei nechta b'fanei nechtam, that the get was signed in front of me. It has to be b'lashon HaKodesh. He cites a whole shtickl Torah from his father. Why does it have to be in Hebrew? And he has another explanation as well regarding the name of his father. What does it mean that only Purim will be the holiday that will exist when Mashiach comes? So he has a few comments from his father, but not really that much. The other son of Rav Yechiel Milchel was Rav Dov Ber. He was a great lover of Eretz Yisrael. He moved to Eretz Yisrael. Actually, the story is when Rav Yechiel Milchel passed away, they asked his son Rav Dov Ber to come back and be the Rav in Novardik. And he said, no, I'm not leaving Eretz Yisrael, no matter what. And they also had a proper relationship. He was a big tzaddik also. They recall, they were maspid at Rav Dov Ber's Levaya, that during Simchas Beis HaShoeva, he would go around Yerushalayim and gather up all of the children who did not have any fathers to dance with them. And he would go and dance with the children to give them chizuk and to make them feel like they had a father. So he had a very chashuv son. And the daughter, Bryna, was married twice. Both husbands passed away early. She had two children from each of the marriages who her father looked after. And Rabbi Chiel Michel passed away. She was left in charge of the production of the Aruch HaShulchan in the advertisements in the newspaper. When the Aruch HaShulchan was put out, it said very clearly, if you want to go buy the Aruch HaShulchan, you go buy it from his daughter, Bryna, the one who is selling them, the one who's in charge of production. The next article is in the Kovetz Chitzei Giborim in Volume 7. And there, Rav Eitam Henkin picks up and he says that after Rav Chiel Michel arrived in Novardik, he began working on his magnum opus, the Aruch HaShulchan, which, as we all know, his most famous work. And he began with which section of the four? You would think, most logically, he would begin with what? Aruch Chaim, right? The most practical area. And he argues and he says, no. He writes in his introduction that I'm going to begin with Choshen Mishpat, with monetary laws. And he says, the reason is that people have already covered Aruch Chaim. There's so many books written about davening and Shabbos. There's so many books about Yoredeya and Kashrus. But he says, who's writing on Choshen Mishpat? Who's showing the layman what to do when it comes to practical issues of monetary issues? And therefore, he began there as well. And therefore, the second work he began was on Evan HaEzer, because again, Evan HaEzer is a little abandoned. There's not so much commentary on it, and therefore, he wanted to give chizik to it. He works on Evan HaEzer, and then he proceeds to Aruch Chaim and Yoredeya, which were already covered. That was the later part of his work. The entire process took 24 years. It's interesting. In the same amount of time it took the Chafetz Chaim to write the Mishnah Berurah, just on Aruch Chaim, Rabbi Chiel Michel Epstein wrote on all Da'al Chalkei Shulchan Aruch. He was quite impressive in how fast he worked. The printing of the Sefer was a little bit more complicated. Not everything was printed in his lifetime. It took a bunch of years afterwards in order to get the money together, and Bryna had to sell copies of the Aruch HaShulchan to raise money to print the next copies of the Aruch HaShulchan. So it took a long time to get all the editions out. There were three sections that were never printed, almost never printed. Those are the sections in Yerodeya and Kuf Chaf Gimel to Kuf Pei Beis, in Yerodeya Reish Gimel to Reish Mem, dealing with Nedarim, and Evan Ezra Samach Vav to Kuf Yud Ches. We know he wrote those sections because he references them, but apparently, for a while, it was thought they were lost during the Holocaust. And however, a number of years ago, it was announced that they found the sections on Nedarim. What happened was, the Aruch HaShulchan shipped his manuscripts on the Aruch HaShulchan HaAsid, his other volume talking about the halachos pertaining to Zrayim and the Yemos HaMashiach. And in that shipment, he shipped to Eretz Yisrael to his grandson, Rav Meir Bar Ilan, so he stuck in the copies on Nedarim. And Rav Meir Bar Ilan didn't realize they were in the box, and he never printed it. And the box was passed down, and eventually, a few years ago, it fell into the lap of Rabbi Simcha Fishbane of Hoboken, New Jersey, and he published them. They were published in a subsequent edition, and you now have the Aruch HaShulchan on Nedarim as well. So it took a long time. But the other two sections were never found, assumed to be lost forever, unless, of course, it's in someone's basement here, and maybe it'll be revealed at some point in time. But the Aruch HaShulchan is not complete. The purpose of the Aruch HaShulchan, he writes in his introduction, is to deal with the poskim who lived after the Shulchan Aruch, to organize, to make sense of the different shitas in halacha. And he says the organization is modeled after the Levush and the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, who wrote their svarim in essay form. Right, the Aruch HaShulchan is essays, long paragraphs delineating the sources from the Gemara, the Rishonim, and putting everything else together. In addition, he says that even though it's ordered al pi seder Shulchan Aruch, he says something that I did not realize until I read this article from Rav Eitam Henkin. He writes in the introduction that really, he's really discussing the Rambam. The whole purpose of the Aruch HaShulchan is to discuss Shitas HaRambam and to handle and to really understand what the Rambam is trying to say. In fact, the model is the Rambam because the Rambam wrote on all areas of halacha and he felt that his writings were like a Rambam for this day, putting everything together, and that was really his main focus on the Rambam. The source of the name of a Sefer is subject to a bit of discussion because he doesn't tell you where he got the name from, and people used to think that it was based on the Pasuk in Yeshayah Perek Chaf Hei. The Pasuk there says, Aruch HaShulchan, not Aruch HaShulchan, Aruch HaShulchan. So how do we know that we're not supposed to pronounce the Sefer Aruch HaShulchan? So the answer is because Rav Chiel Michel knew Russian, as we know. And if you look on the Russian plating of when the Sefer was printed and advertised, written by Rav Chiel Michel, he writes in Russian, Aruch HaShulchan. So he was very conscious and aware of how to spell and pronounce the name of the Sefer, and therefore we know it is Aruch HaShulchan, not Aruch HaShulchan. it is quite remarkable how the Aruch HaShulchan wrote so much in such good quality in such a short period of time. Rav Meir Bar Ilan, the grandson, writes that his grandfather would sit all day from morning until he went to bed writing the Aruch HaShulchan. His only break during the day was for 2 hours to sit on the Beis Din in the Vardik. The rest of the day, for however many years, 24 years, was writing the Aruch HaShulchan. And he said on his table, there were only 4 Sfarim. There was a Rambam, there was a Tur, there was a Shulchan Aruch, and a small Shas of that Masechta of the Sugya he was learning at that time. And at times, he would stand up from his marathon writing just to look in the Sefer, which is remarkable. It was all based on his Bekiyas. The entire edition of the Aruch HaShulchan that was printed was just like it was written. There was no crossouts, there was no mistakes, there was no editing. He was like a computer. He just wrote and wrote perfectly. No grammatical errors, no spelling mistakes, nothing had to be changed. It was all based on 4 books and his Bekiyas of all of Rishonim. Remarkable. He didn't look anywhere else. No computers, no Otzer HaChachma, no Hebrew books, no Bar Ilan, nothing. All he had again was a Rabbah, a Shulchan Aruch, a Torah, and a Gemara, and his entire knowledge of all of Rishonim going into the Aruch HaShulchan, every once in a while looking up a Sefer. Quite a remarkable feat from an Adam Gadol. In Russia, there were always issues with the censors and Svarim. The Russian government were really on top of the censors because they didn't want anything bad to happen. And where was the biggest issue of censorship? In Choshen Mishpat. Why? Because the Russian government wanted to ensure that nobody was telling people to act differently than the Dina de Malchusa, the law of the land. And they were very, very careful when it came to issues of Choshen Mishpat. And they didn't want anyone to have halacha different than their law. Therefore, you will find that entire sections of the Shulchan Aruch HaRav and Choshen Mishpat were simply cut out by the censors, because they had very little tolerance when it came to issues of monetary law. That we almost find as well, there are no tshuvos from Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan Spector in his Ein Yitzchak, his tshuvos. Why? Because the Russian government just got rid of them, and we don't have them. They cut them out because they didn't want to deal with issues of monetary law. The Aruch HaShulchan is no different, and one of the reasons why it took so long to print is because he had to keep on going back to St. Petersburg again and again and again to deal with the issues of the censors. I want to point out a few places where this comes up. In his introduction to Choshen Mishpat, he writes, Komash nisbaru bedinim elu hu rak berishoyin memshoas hakira bedina zemalchus adina. He says, I want to let you know that everything we're going to say here is obviously under the guide of the Tsar, and you have to follow the law of the land. He did not put that in himself. It was put in by the censors. Again in Choshen Mishpat, when he writes about when it comes to issues of being moser against the government, against someone against the government, he has a long paragraph in Shin Pei Ches where he says that the whole difference of Mesira is only in governments that are evil and not good towards the Jews, but now we live in Russia, such an amazing place with such a wonderful government and such a wonderful Tsar, so certainly the Isser of being moser doesn't apply here, and you have to report someone to the government, obviously as well, put in by the Tsar. Sometimes he writes that Goyim were only bad many years ago, or sometimes he'll say that, oh, everything we're talking about Goyim is only talking about Mitzrayim in the days of Paro. Again, also put in by the censor. And Yerodei in Reish Samaches, he talks about converting nowadays, and he says, no, why would anyone want to convert? Because Russia is so amazing, and the Tsar is so good for us, and therefore no one should ever want to convert to Judaism. In Shin Lamed Daled, he talks about Dina de Malchusa, again, how much we have to love the Tsar, and he talks about in the lands of Yishmael, or in Paras, or Morocco, there everything is bad, but in Europe everything is wonderful, and therefore no reason to ever go against the government. And the first Chelek in Or HaChaim has very interesting censorship. If you look there, they didn't want him to call the Masechta Avodah Zarah. They felt it was a bad to talk about Avodah Zarah, and to reference anything to do with the Goyim as Avodah Zarah, and therefore it's called Maseches Akum. So if you're learning the Aruch HaShulchan, and he talks about Maseches Akum, so that's because the censors made him switch it to Avodah Zarah to Maseches Akum. Okay, the Aruch HaShulchan was soon accepted and studied all across the world. He is cited very quickly by his contemporaries. The Tshuvas of the Maharsham, Chelak Aleph, Reish Yud Zayin, Gimel Lamed Aleph, the Tshuvas of Yehuda Leib Gordon, Simon Chaf Aleph, Yaakov Gershuni, Hilchos Shchita, the Darkei Tshuva of the Munkach HaRav as well, all citing the Aruch HaShulchan. He's cited in the Stei Chemed, the incredible encyclopedic work of Rav Cheskel Medini, and many Tshuvos to his nephew Rav Chaim Berlin, and others he heard from the Aruch HaShulchan, wrote, but they didn't have a copy, and they heard, I heard, in the name of the Aruch HaShulchan, all throughout the Imre Yosha, the Divrei Malkiel, very quickly, in a matter of years, a decade, the Aruch HaShulchan became learned everywhere, and very, very popular. Other Rabbanim saw the Aruch HaShulchan, and critiqued the Aruch HaShulchan, and his psakim that went against Gedolim. Rav Moshe Perlmutter, who was the Rav of Lodz, didn't like that the very often the Aruch HaShulchan would argue with the Taz, or argue on the Nodes Behuda. And regards the famous psak of the Aruch HaShulchan Or HaChaim in Siman Ayin Hey regarding women covering their hair, where the Aruch HaShulchan says nowadays that since women normally do not cover their hair, it is not a problem to say Shema in front of a woman whose hair is uncovered because it's not considered a Davar Shebe'erva anymore, and therefore it's not a problem. Just to be clear, he's not saying a woman doesn't have to cover her hair. What he's saying is that it's not an issue of saying Shema in front of it. So that received a large critique from people who came after him. The Papa Rav and the Vine, Yosef and Yerodea Simon Sadi, and who writes as follows, V'yadati mega'onim u'kadoshim, should savchu k'kruchya, people cried like a rooster, al dvarav against his words, v'sramu ma'od, al zeh shenasan michshel chas v'shalom, who's giving people the opportunity to do to make a mistake, lifnei hamayanim, b'dvar of those who look at his words, but tzaku shechas v'shalom nismach al dvarav, chas v'shalom to rely on the Aruch HaShulchan as well. This is the opinion as many other Rabbanim as well. On the other hand, the Gros Moshe, in a famous tshuva in Alef Lametes, writes about the Aruch HaShulchan, kvar hora zaken. So Rav Moshe Feinstein felt when it came to issues of the Aruch HaShulchan Paskindan, kvar hora zaken, his words are considered important, and we follow what he says regardless of one's personal opinion. In the Olam HaChassidus, as we cited before, the Aruch HaShulchan had a little bit of a more difficult time. The Minchas Olazar has a tshuva in Gimel Chaf, where he says the Aruch HaShulchan should not have been lenient when it came to using wells. When it came to Pesach, the minhag by the Hasidim was not to use well water because perhaps someone threw chametz into the well. The Aruch HaShulchan was lenient, says the Minchas Elazar, wrong. That's not the minhag by the Hasidim. He's incorrect. He shouldn't have said that. The Nemukei Or HaChaim, the Minchas Elazar writes as well in Tav Samach Zayin, the Aruch HaShulchan was wrong for saying that even the Zohar HaKadosh supports the Shita of Rashi when it comes to wearing tefillin, and that the Zohar does not support Rabbeinu Tam. And the Minchas Elazar is very upset that he's going against the Arizal. The Arizal tells us that Rabbeinu Tam is important in the eyes of the Arizal, and the Zohar supports the Rabbeinu Tam and doesn't support Rashi, and again, upset with the psak of the Aruch HaShulchan or the approach of the Aruch HaShulchan. In the Or HaGunas in Chelek Bezin, Amud Yud Tes, it records, then Rav Avram Shalom Halberstam, the Rav of Strupkov, read the Aruch HaShulchan, he got to the piece where the Aruch HaShulchan writes about machine matzah, and where he said machine matzah is fine. And when the Rebbe of Strupkov got to that piece, he crossed it out in his copy of Aruch HaShulchan. The problem with that story is that the Aruch HaShulchan doesn't write about machine matzah, so I'm not entirely clear what exactly the Rebbe of Strupkov erased from his Aruch HaShulchan, because he doesn't talk about machine matzah. It could be what he's talking about is the issue of shmura matzah. The Aruch HaShulchan says there's no need to be makan on shmura matzah the rest of the days of Pesach. Maybe he was upset about shmura matzah, but it couldn't have been machine matzah. The next article written by Rav Henkin is in the Ole Mamre, the Alone Mamre, in Kufchaf Aleph. And he discusses the new edition of the Aruch HaShulchan published by the Oz V'Hadar Printing House. And he writes that it's very nice, and it's nice lettering, and everything's very beautiful. But he has two very interesting critiques that are important to note. He says that if you look on the bottom here of the new printing of the Aruch HaShulchan, so on the bottom here there are Piskei Mishneh Berurah. There are the psakim of the Mishneh Berurah as it corresponds to the Aruch HaShulchan. And Rav Henkin is very bothered by this, because what it does is that it cheapens the Aruch HaShulchan as a posek. Why does the Aruch HaShulchan need the additional comments of the Mishneh Berurah? He can't stand on his own, and he's very bothered. The Aruch HaShulchan needs to be handled with kid gloves, you have to make sure also have the Mishnah Berurah there, where you can't learn the Aruch HaShulchan and Paskin based on the Aruch HaShulchan. And he says, what would it be like if they wrote a sefer of the halachos of the psakim of Rav Mordechai Eliyahu, and in the bottom they had the psakim of Rav Avadji Yosef? What an embarrassment. The Aruch HaShulchan should stand on its own. It doesn't need the psakim of the Mishnah Berurah to make it a better sefer. It should be studied on its own and appreciated on its own. And he says, the reason is because they don't respect the Aruch HaShulchan. It's nice that they published a sefer, but they think that the Mishnah Berurah is the posek acharon. The Mishnah Berurah is the real posek. And therefore, we need to put the Mishnah Berurah's psakim along with the Aruch HaShulchan. And what's his proof? Because when Oz v'Hadz are published, their new edition of the Mishnah Berurah, did they put the psakim of the Aruch HaShulchan on the bottom? No, they didn't. Why? Because the Mishnah Berurah is the main thing. The Aruch HaShulchan is just, the sidekick on the side, not that important as the Mishnah Berurah. And that's critique number one from Rav Eitam Henkin. The second critique is very interesting. In this beautiful edition, there's a very nice introduction about the life and the stories of the Aruch HaShulchan and all different types of things. They want to throw in that he was anti-Zionist. All the important parts about the Aruch HaShulchan's life. And there he notes that they tell you, where do we get the sources for our story from? Obviously from the Makor Baruch, right? The famous work of the son of the Aruch HaShulchan, Rav Baruch Epstein. But as we already noted, there's not that much in the Makor Baruch about his father. So they must have been getting the stories from someplace else. So where were they getting the stories from? Which they did not mention where. They were getting the stories from two Sfarim. One is from the biography of the Netziv written by Rav Meir Bar Ilan from Mivolozhin Ad Yerushalayim, and also from the amazing six-volume collection of Rav Yehuda Leib Maimon, the famous signer on the Declaration of Independence for Israel, the famous editor of Sfarim, founder of Mossad Rav Kook. So there, he has six amazing volumes called Sarei Meah, the most... All the famous Gedolim stories you've heard about Rabbanim in the last few hundred years are in Sarei Meah. They're all from that book. Now, if anyone's ever told them to you or quoted them, they're really getting them from Sarei Meah. All of the great Gedolim stories are in Sarei Meah. And there are stories over there about the Aruch HaShulchan as well, because Rav Yehuda Leib Maimon was a Talmud of the Aruch HaShulchan. And says Rav Eitam Henkin, how come Oz v'Hadar doesn't tell you that these are the sources or where they get the stories from? Because Rav Meir Bar Ilan was Mizrahi, and Rav Yehuda Leib Maimon was Mizrahi, was a Zionist. And therefore, chas v'shalom, that Oz v'Hadar should tell you what the source of their stories are from, and not mention them, his second critique of the edition. The last piece is from the Kobi to Shirin Lamed Beis, the last piece that Rav Eitam Henkin wrote in the Aruch HaShulchan. He had a plan to write a lot more, with a lot more interesting things, but this is the last piece we have written in 2004. This is in Kovitz Ushurin Lamed Beis, and he says, regarding the other Svarim of the Aruch HaShulchan, what else did Rav Yechiel Michal Epstein write? He writes about the Haggadah Le'al Shimurim, a beautiful Haggadah, which is based on the drushos and the comments that Rav Yechiel Michal Epstein would give himself at Le'al HaSeder, written up by himself and his Talmidim, to sit at the Seder with the Aruch HaShulchan, with the Haggadah Le'al Shimurim. He has beautiful pieces in there as well. In addition, there's a Perush on the Yushami called Michal Hamayim. There's the Aruch HaShulchan HaAsid, which we discussed before, about the halachas pertaining to Zrayim, Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, Shemitah, things of that nature, which was interesting to note, points out Rav Eitam Henkin, the two greatest psakim of halacha l'maisa in our generation, the Aruch HaShulchan, the Mishnah Berurah, both wrote corresponding works about observing the halachos of the Yimos Mashiach. The Chafetz Chaim wrote the Lakutei Halachos, talking about Kadshim and following the mitzvahs of the Beis HaMikdash when Mashiach comes, and the Aruch HaShulchan wrote the Aruch HaShulchan Asid. Just a beautiful thought, that halacha l'maisa, people who are thinking, totally engrossed, totally attached to halacha l'maisa, never lost focus of the Yimos Mashiach and serving in the Beis HaMikdash. In addition, there is the Drushos Kol Ben Levi from his Drushos he gave as a Rav in Navarduk. And these Drushos are very interesting. They talk about issues of the time period, discussing anti-Semitism, how anti-Semitism is a punishment from a Kaddish Baruch Hu. Pogroms are a punishment from a Kaddish Baruch Hu. There's also a few Tshuvos recently published in the Kisvei Aruch HaShulchan. And Rav Eitam Henkin elaborates on the Sefer Kisvei Aruch HaShulchan in the Yolnei Mamre in Kuf Chaf Alf as well. So this is the entire Torah. I've presented everything here after reading. This is certainly at least 200 pages of writing from Rav Eitam Henkin, summarized in 48 minutes. So you have the writings of Rav Eitam Henkin, Hashem Yikam Damo, and really we see two things. We see just the beauty and the life of the Aruch HaShulchan, to be able to appreciate in Adam Gadol what he produced and where he came from and what he accomplished, and the Sefer that we learn so much from, that we love so much, B'lei V'Nefesh, to see who he was about and where he came from, the appreciation of Jewish history and how it can inspire our own Avodas Hashem. And at the same time, we see the incredible breadth of knowledge and research and time and effort put in to producing Talmud Torah and understanding Torah by Rav Eitam Henkin in a most beautiful fashion, that we can appreciate it. That to do this is a lifetime's work. To put these articles together is a lifetime's work. And he did it at such a young age, with such clarity and such care and such beauty. It is truly a tremendous loss to not have someone like Rav Eitam Henkin anymore, and his Eishes Chayil Nama, and we certainly miss his Torah, and we will miss his Torah into the future, to only know that we have just a small bit of what it could have been, of what could have been produced by such an Adam Gadol.
Beautiful shoe. I'm going to tell our cousin. I didn't know how to do it.